Welcome to another segment of Market Over Drive. Happy Thursday. Is it Thursday? I don't even know what day today is. It's just madness. It's spring market. It's tax season for us 1099 employees. Well, that was the 17th. For those of us who ask for extensions. Anyway, how are you, Mr. Mehmet?
I'm always looking for an extension. Look for an extension of 9 minutes today to start the show, 9 minutes extended.
I'm glad that you're able to tell our listeners that you're the reason why we're starting our show late every single week.
I own up to my mistakes, unlike you, Carlamina.
I don't make mistakes.
Oh, yes, you do.
No,
here
I
we
do
are.
Not. That was a good one. Let's talk about more ILO mistakes. Well, that's not a, mistake.
Not a mistake.
I can't even say that. Hi, Grandpa.
Hey, Carla.
I gotta be nice to him.
So you filed your extension, right?
I'm not talking to you about these issues on the
you
air.
You know who's listening? It's our girlfriend, Iris.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Iris.
Anyway, great show today. We're going to... See, you're always complaining about realtor shows. All we do is talk about multiple bidding wars. I'm going to figure out a way to insert ourselves in there,
inspection
though.
Inspection issues, yeah. Appraisal problems.
Mechanical liens.
Talk about everything but finance. So today we get a show.
So, like, a long, long time ago, like 4 years ago, at another life and station, I decided to produce a show on mechanical liens. And I still haven't heard the end of it. And I think that was our best, most popular show.
No, no. There was nobody listening to the show on mechanical liens. Nobody tuned in to find out what a mechanic's lien is. Get over it.
Lydia was listening.
No.
My mama
even
was listening.
Even my ma didn't love me enough to listen to that one.
Anyway, how are you, Mr. Funes?
I'm doing great.
Tell us a little bit about the marketplace.
The marketplace.
What's cooking?
The market's cooking. The market's always cooking. You know, we're just hoping that we get a little bit more inventory.
Seriously, it's insane.
But the news is indicating that more and more properties, more and more homeowners are going to put their homes on the market. So you can't hear me?
What are you doing with that mic? You're like talking above the microphone. It's kind of awkward today.
It's like my little
is that
arm
a new thing?
Is broken here.
Wait, his little arm.
Your little arm's broken? That's cute. Sorry to hear that.
My little arm thing is broken.
Enough about your little arm. That's poor little kid. Grago Funes' little arm is busted, so let's just move on to the important things in this room.
Yes.
Please.
And important people in this room.
The VIP.
Enough
VIP
about here. Us oh, yeah. And your broken arm and, you know, Carlo's bad extensions and my mistakes. So... VIPs, let's get to him. Who wants to introduce our guest today?
I think he doesn't even need an introduction.
I think he's going to still need an introduction.
Is he really?
Can't introduce yourself.
Give him a little one.
Give him a little one.
I don't like it.
So in studio today from Keller Williams Realty, we got Tom Brandt visiting us today.
The Tom Brandt.
I honestly thought when I saw the email, I mentioned this earlier, that it was Tom Brady coming in studio today.
Close enough.
Yeah,
close enough.
My wife is lovely, but she is not Giselle.
Beep that out. In case your wife's watching right now.
She's like, don't come home today. You're not getting any food if you think someone's cooking.
The hungry Tom Brandt, who will not be eating for a week and sleeping on the couch. Tom, it's a pleasure to have you on Market Overdrive. We always let our guests give us a little bit of a background and history. How long you been doing it? What got you in it? The whole nine yards.
All right. Well, Carly, my past life, I was a CPA, so
really?
I could have done those taxes for you. But I've been selling real estate for 26 years now.
Oh, wow. Some time.
So, some time.
That's what I said.
Told
That's
you.
A lot of time.
Yeah. Okay.
He beat you out.
He did. You got 3 years on
I still enjoy
me.
It.
And you still enjoy
years.
It.
Well,
and he's here to talk about it today.
So you've seen a lot of markets, Tom, right?
Yep.
What are you telling us about today's market? What are you seeing?
Today's market, I think, is the ideal time for sellers to get their homes on the market and sell. You said it earlier, there's very little inventory, and interest rates have been creeping up since the fourth quarter last year. Mm-hmm. Estimates are they're going to be higher.
Yep.
You know, so.
I don't get it. Why do you think that is, that we don't have inventory? Why aren't sellers selling?
They are. They're just not calling you.
That's a good one.
Tom's like, I got tons of listings.
I just want to know this one
look
for
at that
the record.
He brought in.
I just want to know.
Those are all sellers.
Well, yeah. Full disclosure, the only reason why I'm actually here kissing Tom's ass is because I submitted an offer on one of his listings in that folder right there.
Has 15 offers in it.
And none of them.
And yours is the bottom of the pile. So, Tom.
No, it is not on the bottom.
Don't listen. You know what? At the end of the day, I don't care what Nick says. I think you're just jealous of my awesome.
Cool. Tom, tell us about you were going somewhere with the market.
I mean, I think you know, it's economics 101. As interest rates go up, I think there's going to be a potential. No, but there should be a flood of sellers because, candidly, you know, rates go up, prices go down.
People like panic. They
economics
might
101.
Rush.
So, and people's income is not necessarily going to go up in the same level over the next year the way interest rates have and might. So they're not going to be able to afford as much.
That's not what our president said. Everyone's a millionaire next year.
I majored in economics. I don't think he did.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Calling out the
fair
president.
Enough.
Oops.
Fair enough. So, I mean, that's a good point. I also think that we finally are starting to get to, what were we hearing back in 2014? There's, even though most houses were coming, you know, above water, because we had a big underwater problem for a long time.
Oh, huge.
There's at least enough equity that's somewhat of an incentive to sell now. There's a lot of houses that were just bought in 2004 and 5 and bought at a very, very high price. And then we had a recession that was, well, call it a crash, whatever you want to call it. And some of these homes that were going for $500,000 were now going for $350,000.
30%, and people 35% bought them across the board.
At 5 and, you know, selling at $450,000 today wasn't necessarily on the top of their list. So I think you're going to see more and more homes as equity appreciation in certain metropolitan areas have gone up 6% to 10% regularly over the last 4 years. Now they have incentive.
Yeah, I think you're right, Nick. I think those who sort of, if you will, bought at the wrong time in terms of the peak of the market now can get out. And right. if they've been paying their mortgage for 10 years, they have some equity.
Right.
And those who bought right, like those who bought after the decline of 35%.
Oh, they have a lot of equity.
They have a ton of equity, and it's time to take some of the profit off the table.
Yeah.
And it's good that you're encouraging people, but the reality of it is also that you have homeowners who are in really good interest rates, and so they don't need to sell, right? Comfort. Why would they sell? Yeah. Because they have an amazing mortgage payment. And so that's why our market, that's why our buyers are where we are. And I like that you say that people should, you know, if you're looking to sell, this is the right time. What do you advise buyers who are shopping and are submitting lowball offers?
Like Carla.
No.
Well,
I just want them to hear it from another source.
You know, with Keller Williams, we're happy to share our secrets. And I'll tell you, this past weekend, I had a client act like a seller with multiple offers. She wrote offers on three different properties simultaneously. And we knew that the offers were not probably strong enough to be accepted on the face. And then we looked to see who was most interested in selling. And, you know, we got one rejection and two counteroffers, and she's got one of those two properties under contract.
Well, at least you got counters, right?
She sprayed bullets everywhere.
Well,
Bye. What if they all said accepted?
It would have been a wonderful it would have been a wonderful thing, but and that was her question, and I basically said, not to worry, if I get a phone call, you know, once we get a phone call that one of them's being accepted, I can call the others and say, we're withdrawing the offer.
We're rescinding our offers. So, yeah, that's right. Good advice as well. Like, you have to understand how this works. Just because you're submitting offers, A, doesn't mean they're all going to get accepted. Right. And most likely, your first offer is never going to get accepted.
Well, and that,
unless, of course, the seller's been on the market for a very long time and they've gone through their due diligence. They've had multiple inspections, a lot of failures, and what have you. But in this market, when there's no inventory, I mean, seriously, sellers can get really sophisticated about how they want to handle this.
Right. Well, in that case, my buyer had lost out on three different properties, multiple offers. She was getting a little frustrated. And the three properties we went after were like new on the market, a beautiful house, something on the market 50, 60 days, and something that had been on the market 200 days. So,
yeah. So word of advice, if a property is newly on the market and we are telling you that there's a lot of people going to the open house, and then if the property comes on the market today or tomorrow, and we're telling you we can't wait till next week to show it to you because they're going to have multiple offers, by Monday it's gone, right? And are you seeing a lot of offers sight unseen?
No. Honestly, I haven't, and I'd be leery of that.
Yeah. So you know, like an offer sight unseen typically means that the buyer is going to submit an offer, they're going to issue their terms, but they haven't seen the property, so it's contingent on seeing the property. The only problem with that is that what kind of seller is going to have, like you had 15 offers, right?
Right.
Are you really going to wait for that other person to come through so they can see it, even if it's an amazing offer?
Yeah, it's tough to keep all the other you know,
buyers.
No one, buyers on hold in the agents. They don't want their offers to be shopped.
It's a perfect time to segue.
All right, let's do it. So, segue. Rocco, this is your show.
Well, real quick, and I'll let Rocco do his thing.
One last thing I got to touch on.
Okay.
Carla said, why aren't more people putting their homes on the market? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a comfort thing. What's the incentive of me putting my house, even though I got 10% equity in it, what's my incentive to sell? Am I going to upgrade into a shiny new penny, mm-hmm. which is new construction, which doesn't exist right now? So my take on that is that we need more new construction, more affordable new construction, so that our current homeowners consider putting their homes on the market and roll that equity into, you know, a better quality property. And I think that's why the inventory is just staggering slowly. But if we can see a little bit more new construction in our industry, affordable new construction again, we'll be able to pick up steam with more and more people selling their homes on the market. I mean,
that's the whole entire debate, right, is the lack of new construction, but that has to do with you guys, the lending and the guidelines, and there not being enough price per square foot
to justify.
Homes.
Yeah, we don't build homes.
I mean, you're issuing loans, right, for new construction.
Yeah.
Chicago hasn't seen enough appreciation in price per
square
foot.
We need more builders to get construction.
He's trying to say somebody's got to get out there and build them.
Somebody has to build these properties.
We do have developers looking to build.
No, we have high-rise towers that are going up, but we don't have...
And being rented.
Yeah,
a lot of rentals in the high rises.
So
I see more and more, rather than new home developments, you see a lot of the flip and rehab.
Yeah.
You know, rehab and flip. Yeah. And
I mean, that's the next best
thing.
The
bungalow belts.
Yeah, but the problem with those, and just, I'm sorry, I just have to say this, the problem with the flips is that there's not enough, you know, like, it's not affordable, right? Because investors are buying them and they're picking them up at a higher price point, so then they also have to put in their yield. And so by the time they bring it on the market, it's a higher price home. So therefore, it's not affordable to your, you know, first-time buyer, per se, your average right. 450 or 350 buyer of a single-family home. Mm. They're coming on the market and they're like 600 because that's where the profitability is when you're picking these up at like 250 or so. So where the market is like really tight, and I just think that buyers should know this stuff, because when they're shopping, I don't think in the spring market there's such a thing as a shiny penny. There just isn't. I mean, you're just chasing.
Got one in my pocket.
Well, that's primarily why we need more new
construction. That's all I got in my pocket. But I have a shiny penny
shiny
in my
penny.
Pocket. Segwaying back, multiple offers, which is a problem. We have less sellers than we normally do. We have plenty of buyers, but not enough inventory, which has you walking around with 15 offers in a folder.
Right.
Carla's buried the 14. and... You know, it goes to...
Are you going to tell
now,
me the price?
Now, we're sifting through these offers, and they're all written differently. Some people Some people might be willing to buy this house in cash. Some people are going to put down 20%. Some people put the bare minimum. I have no idea what that property you have in your folder is, but let's just assume, and for the sake of simple arguments here, it's a single-family home.
Nope.
It's
a two-flat.
Okay, it's a two-unit.
Two-flat, which makes it more affordable.
Okay, it's a two-flat.
Right.
So, now, programs are something you're going to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And when your seller takes into consideration, and you're going to advise them on specific programs, are going to be this particular program looks like easier way of financing versus this particular program. And today's topic is buying a home conventional versus FHA. Now where does that? And I don't want to jump over we have a chronological order we want to follow with the do's and the don'ts and the whys and the why nots for FHA purchasing, but. Where does an FHA offer, or how does an FHA offer play into the decision-making process of you and your seller compared to a conventional with 20% down or all that other fun stuff? Closer to Mike.
Right. I would say that the FHA offer, as long as you know they've been fully vetted and the pre-approval is a solid pre-approval, you're in the mix as long as your price is in the mix. This particular transaction, two of the 15 offers were FHA. The prices were not, you know, the prices were not sufficient enough to be in the top, you know, half dozen offers. Mm-hmm. Now, if they had been, it would have then warranted a second look. But again, with the conventional offers, when you have multiples like that, in general, you're going to have someone or more people who have the larger down payment. You
know, okay.
We had, half a dozen offers with 20 to 30% down.
Let me hit you with some brass tacks on a tough question.
Sure.
You have a both vetted from the same exact lender, two offers, same exact price, top offers. One is conventional, one is FHA. One is 5% down conventional or 3% down conventional. One is 3.5% down FHA. So there's no strength in down payment.
Oh.
And how does that affect your decision now? You flip a coin?
Well, if they're identical price.
250 and
similar,
250.
Yeah, similar 5% conventional, 3.5% FHA. There's not much difference there in terms of the strength of the offer. Then we'll start looking at some of the details. Is it an FHA 203K where they're borrowing additional funds to do renovation? If that's the case, then there's not the concern about the FHA appraisal that might require some work to be done to the property.
Right.
Because they're borrowing extra money that can take that into consideration.
Because FHA just does some sneaky little time-consuming things to a property that, you know, no one really puts a lot of value in. Painted gutters. Like there's paint chips flipping up, you know, coming off the gutter. FHA will require a seller to get out there, repaint them, and have them ready to go. Conventional doesn't care.
Exactly.
So little things like this. And I think that a seller would, when they're aware of all this stuff, might have a tendency to skew just to, even though your house might be perfectly fine, you don't know what's going to happen until the inspector comes out, right?
Exactly. Well, and actually, in that case, it's, you know, you have the regular home inspection, but then you have the FHA appraisal, which is almost like a second inspection.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That can cost you money.
Well, Nick, before we get too carried on, like, well, can we just stop a little bit and have Grocco explain, like, the difference between these two loan products in plain English as we promised in our marketing?
The short version?
Yeah.
Little arm, short version. Yeah. Let's just keep going.
Real simple. So the FHA loan is very lenient when it comes to credit rating. They require a small down payment, 3.5% typically. Conventional has caught up, though. The conventional loan program now does offer a 3% program, similar to FHA. But the mortgage insurance is slightly different. Keep that in mind. Nick touched on this on a side note. In some cases, rate does play a difference on an FHA loan versus a conventional loan. But that's a debate on a totally different level. Tom and I had this conversation earlier where, what if my FHA buyer is making an offer much higher than everybody else? Is the seller willing to consider my offer? Because there's a stigma with FHA that, you know, there's more documentation, the appraisals are a bit more rigorous.
Their credit score is not as good.
And I'm always an advocate for that consumer because, for me, I could care less. My processing and my underwriting process, even my pre-approval process, is the same all the way through, meaning I'm going to vet out that borrower the same way, whether they're going conventional or FHA early on. So my underwriting process shouldn't be any harder.
Right.
And if my borrower who is approved FHA is considering going above while asking, you know, I would hope that that offer is considered from the seller side.
So what is your opinion, Tom? Are you still sustaining?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, 20 years ago, there may have been
it was a
more
lot.
Of a stigma. Yep. On, and in fact, for years, I used to tell people, you know, FHA is not sort of the poor person's loan. Mm-hmm. And I used to use an analogy saying, using a certain billionaire's name as, you know, if he wanted to get an FHA loan, he could, as long as he doesn't own another primary residence. You know, there's a variety of reasons.
So I just want to, like, clarify, too, a little bit more with respects to an FHA versus conventional. So anytime you're putting less than 20% down, you are going to demonstrate a little bit higher risk to the investor who's the lender who's letting you borrow money. And it's basically your business partner in acquiring that asset or making that purchase. So say you go to Grocco, you say, hey, I want to put 20% down on a purchase. You guys are business partners. The person is not going to walk away from 20% down. So you're not showing significant risk. Anytime you say you're going to put less than 20%, then the lender's going to say, okay, so now I'm going to have you take out mortgage insurance premium. So I think that's where it differs.
Yeah, there is a difference. I mean, Both loans today carry mortgage insurance unless exactly what
you
just said.
When you say both loans, though, not the 20% down.
An FHA loan carries mortgage insurance for life. There's no way around it.
Right.
A conventional loan, if you are doing 20% down, does not carry mortgage insurance. But there's been a lot of conventional loans today where they're doing 5%, 10%.
And then you're 3%.
I got to correct you on that real quick. And just because it's pretty recent, but an FHA loan doesn't carry mortgage insurance for life if you put down 11%. If you're at 89.99 LTV, they recently changed it where you can't get out of mortgage insurance. It's if when you're over the 90 threshold, it's permanent unless you refinance it. And that's recent, so...
Really?
Yes, it is. Yes, because okay. I actually just found that on accident myself. But hit the brakes. Everybody hit the brakes for 1 second, because there's a part of the show that we have to do, and we have to do it early in the show. We can't wait till later in the show, because we have to come back to it later in the show, so we're going to do it now at this point in the show. It's called The Nitro Question.
I didn't hear the music.
Nitro. Everybody, you don't have to hear the music. It's in my head. It's like...
Like a lot of things that are in your head.
I actually did the hit the brakes.
Like the crazy.
You know, part.
That's it?
Yeah. I never hear it anyway, so I don't know when it's going on, so I'm just going to fire it off like this.
I think they just killed that part of our show, and you just keep doing it.
No. The Nitro Question today is brought to you by Tamika Scott with Money Matters Financial Peace. Tamika, thanks for sponsoring the Nitro Question, and every show we ask our guest something random. And we don't want you to answer the question right away. We want your answer a little bit later.
Okay.
But you've been through some highs and lows in 26 years. Mm-hmm. I know in 23 years I've been through some, so you're gonna think about the lows. And what I mean, and we have to eliminate the market crash itself, because that's too easy. I'm not going to let you get out with saying, the market crashing was low of my career. We know that was everybody's low in the career when it came from an economic standpoint. But in your 26 years, it being, like I said, a very high and a very low industry at times, and some great moments have come, there are some dark days, whatever that might be, an exploding file, a real ugly fight between a seller and a buyer. I mean, just something that has really, really put you in a situation where you might have actually considered going back to being a CPA. You know, we have our moments saying this is the greatest decision of my life,
right?
Or maybe I should just go back to what I was doing. It doesn't necessarily mean because you were making more or less money, mm-hmm. but it's just taxing. Something daunting. So either give us a moment, an era, a time, or a specific deal, whatever it might be, where you actually said, wow, I think I might need to go do a career change. That is the Nitro Question. They're off the cuff. They have no relevancy to the topic, but we just like to hear everyone's different stories. And sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're serious. Today you got a serious one because you do have an extensive amount of time in the industry. So think about it. Let it marinate. We'll be back again. Tamika Scott with Money Matters Financial Peace was the sponsor of today's Nitro Question. We'll be back in about 20 minutes with that one. Move it forward, girl.
So, okay. Can I go back to my point?
You can do whatever you want.
Let's
point
do
away.
That.
Did you remember it?
Well, no. The reason why I was trying to kind of go back to the how much money you're putting down, I think, because that's basically what differentiates. Is mm-hmm. that a word? Did I say that
correctly? Say
that
again.
You got it.
Differentiates.
She got it.
It makes it different from each other. It's the FHA versus conventional, right? It's how much money you're putting down. Mm-hmm. So going back to your example, Tom, where you had 15 offers.
Right.
Mine of not making it and me still trying to push that subject.
Right.
But if you have 20% down, I'm going to look at you as, okay, so what happens if the appraisal comes in lower? I can go back and renegotiate with that buyer that has more liquidity to go ahead and absorb, maybe put more money down and then pay the difference into the, you know, like maybe the property doesn't come out to value, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're at 5.25 and it comes in at 520, whatever, right?
Right.
So 5,000, they have to come out of pocket because the lender's not going to lend you on that. So they can reduce their 20% down and say, I'm just going to do, I don't know, 15% down or whatever, and then pay the difference out of pocket. If I have a 3.5% loan buyer or a 3% down loan buyer, they're not going to be able to do that.
Right.
So I'm going to look for the buyer that's going to have more strength in the game or in getting the deal done. Because if you have 15 buyers, imagine picking the wrong one. So then you're like 30 days out and you're like, okay, what's going on? Like you just lost all other buyers because the market is moving fast.
Right.
And so
right.
in 3 days or 4 days, that buyer has already bought something else. Right. So while you were able to generate 15 offers in this like no inventory market, those buyers are still like really hungry and they need to get something under contract. And so if you don't make the right decisions for your client or give your clients the best advice, you're back to square one.
So you're saying an FHA buyer is not willing to come out of pocket to cover the difference?
Not willing, not able.
How are they not able?
Because they only have 3.5% to put down. Typically, if you don't have a lot of money to put down, you're going to go use
them. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Let's back it up.
Back it up.
Just because I want to put 3.5% down doesn't mean I have more money elsewhere to put down.
I mean, or don't have money elsewhere.
Right. But you said it best. There's a billionaire that could have used an FHA loan, right?
Right.
As an example, but we can't always just assume, because if I'm buying a property, sometimes as an investor, I want to come out the least amount of money out of pocket. And if I have the option of going FHA at 3.5% to buy a 4-unit building, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. And we can all disagree on that, Greco, though, because if somebody wants to be conservative in the way they spent their money, I'm not going to be paying a premium. I'm not going to pay a mortgage insurance premium on money if I have the money to put down. Why am I going to care? Why is my my carrying cost?
I'll tell you why. What if you're about to get married? You and your fiance want to buy your first home. You only have $40,000. You need $10,000 at 3.5% down. And you got to pay for a wedding. Now what?
You could do. I mean, I always tell my
clients.
I tell my clients, look. Mm-hmm. Leave as much money available for a rainy day. You never know what's going to happen. I've obviously been through the recession, and we knew what happened with short sales and foreclosures, and people lost everything. So why put all your eggs in one basket, right? I'm always advising clients, if they're buying two prop, if they're a spouse, maybe put it under one person's name, and then also, you know, keep the asset under one person's income, and then go, you know, that route. I'm a very conservative agent. But when it comes to multiple bidding wars, Tom, are you seriously going to, if you have two same offer property, if you have two same offer price offers, what are you going to make? What are you going to tell your client? What are you going to recommend?
The larger down, you know, the larger down payment availability is going to be a stronger offer.
What if the FHA offer is willing to come in higher and puts it in writing?
But we just said if there's two $425,000 offers, one is conventional and the other one is FHA.
He said the larger down payment option, right?
Yeah, so he's going to take the conventional deal.
So you can have a conventional offer at 5%, but don't think we haven't done FHA loans, like I just said, at 89.9% LTV.
Right. And
so
again,
that's the larger one.
Well, so that's it. Go ahead, Tom.
But from a practical matter, for example, in this instance, we asked for all the offers to be presented Sunday at 6, and later that evening I sent out an email to everyone sort of clarifying information from the owner and kind of giving direction. But the final question was, in light of the environment where none of us have control over who the appraiser is going to be sent out to a property because of the use of the appraisal management companies, what does your client intend to do if the appraisal comes in below our contract price? And then I spelled out, A, will they bring additional cash to the table? And if so, up to what dollar amount? B, will they ask their lender to send a new appraiser? Parentheses, some lenders won't do that. PNC is one. They won't do a second appraisal, period. C,
people no clothes, PNC.
Right. C, you know, are they willing to switch lenders in order to get a new appraisal?
Wow.
Or D, you know, are they going to ask the seller to, you know,
cut the appraisal down, cut the value,
adjust the price
to
match the appraisal,
you know, meet them halfway, etc.
So,
and I asked all those folks to get back to us to let us know.
So what did you get anybody to agree?
Yes, several.
The FHA client.
No.
But see, this is the craziness, right? No. I would never, ever advise my client to go ahead and pay above fair market value. Because in essence, what you're saying is we have multiple bids. Everybody wants a home. And we just said that the job growth is not going to support the increases in value.
Right.
So your bank. So here's the deal. So when you submit an offer, I always tell my clients there's checks and balances. At the end of the day, if the property doesn't appraise out, I will negotiate on behalf of my client that the price is going to be adjusted to reflect fair market value of that appraised value from the lender.
Right. And if I'm on the buying side, I'm going to try and do that for my buyer as well.
But this
There's a difference between fair market value, which is what a ready, willing, and able buyer in an arm's length transactions willing to pay for a property.
Oh, we're getting technical. No, I love it. This stuff excites me, really.
We got 15 ready, willing, and able buyers.
And that's the market
value.
But
that is not necessarily appraised value.
Yep.
As
negotiate that with an appraiser who's going to be in there and said, well, those are contingents. Those values do not exist. They do not match the pricing.
Right. And I shared with a number of the agents who had already submitted offers and were perhaps back in the property for a second time, I shared with them I was going to be asking this question, and it was important. And why? Because I had a very similar property in the similar neighborhood last year. 11 written offers.
Hmm. Yeah.
All of them, 2 were at the asking price, 9 of them over the asking price. And that appraiser brought the appraised value in at the asking price, which was $25,000 less than that property sold for.
Right. I mean, I had a property a year ago on Drake, also in the same neighborhood, that was $50,000. But let's talk about underpricing, mm-hmm. that strategy.
Well, it's, you know, you hope that you're not so far underpriced.
What?
But cool. you price it within a range.
Wait.
And you let the seller sort of dictate where it's going to go. That example last year with 11 offers,
mm-hmm.
my seller wanted an owner-occupant to buy the home that they had lived in for 29 years. Mm. He turned down a full cash offer he turned down a cash offer that was only $500 less than the 20% down conventional offer, because the cash offer he felt was from an investor. He wanted the young couple who was going to make it their home.
And sentimental moment.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you educating Carla on how to deal with multiple offers, because that's not the show that we're actually doing today.
Sorry.
The topic of the show and why people are jumping on and jumping off online is because the topic of the show is conventional loans versus FHA loans.
Let's jump back on, guys.
Somehow we've gotten into anything but that topic.
I'm still trying to get my deal accepted here.
How much time do we have
left? I'll just take over the show from here so I can keep it on course, because we've completely gone ADHD with it at this point. Although it's good information, good stuff, but let's get back to it. Who wants to break down the general, what's the reason someone would even use an FHA loan versus a conventional loan in the first place? Because I think we've discussed sellers and how they look at them.
And I had a great deal last year where I targeted FHA buyers, because mm-hmm. those sellers contacted me thinking that they were going to have a short sale mm-hmm. and come short of losing their home. Mm-hmm. And when I saw it, the value was there, but the condition was rough. You know, so that people could just pay a little bit more and get something that was in much better condition. And I basically said to them, look, you know, the ideal buyer is an FHA buyer with a 203K loan who has limited funds. They don't have enough to buy a house that's $40,000 or $50,000 more expensive, but they can put $40,000 into the rehab. You know, so on top of your purchase
price. In layman's terms, an FHA 203K loan is essentially a fixer-upper.
Exactly.
It's a fixer-upper type loan. You get in, you get some money to make the repairs that the appraiser's already under the assumption is part of the reason, and he's going to label those repairs needed, and you could also mark down any other additional repairs you plan on doing that aren't maybe part of the FHA requirement, and then you have a new value, and you get the loan for the house, and of course the loan to do the construction itself.
Correct.
Now, most of the time, 90% of the time, FHA loans that are being done are just very standard eye for an eye loans. They're just to purchase a property. So mm-hmm. who is this consumer, Grocco, compared to a standard conventional? And let's stick with 3.5% versus, conventionally you could do 3%. So FHA minimum is 3.5%. Who's the conventional 3% buyer, generally speaking? And then, and why would you be forced to use FHA at this point to a 3.5% person that doesn't? You know, why pick FHA over conventional or vice versa?
So there's a lot of pros to do an FHA loan. I said earlier, they're more lenient on credit, so you don't have to have the best credit score in the world. I've seen scenarios where you can go as low as 580 on a credit score to be able to purchase and utilize that 3.5% down payment. FHA is great where they're more lenient on your debt to income ratio, meaning you can carry more debt on a monthly basis to be able to afford the mortgage. FHA is great in the sense where the loan is assumable. Some people don't know that you can actually transfer that loan. So let's say you lock in at a great interest rate today. Somebody else can actually assume that loan later on down the road, so long as they qualify for that mortgage. FHA is more forgiving mm-hmm. on past credit. So if you had a foreclosure, a short sale, a bankruptcy in the past, you know, you can utilize the FHA loan a lot faster versus a conventional loan, which requires more time. And lastly, an FHA loan is going to permit later down the road what's called a streamline. And a streamline is a loan that allows you to refinance your current mortgage into maybe a lower rate or a lower term without having to go through all the hoopla of verifying the appraised value,
income, assets.
As long as you've paid that mortgage consecutively for 12 months straight, you qualify for that FHA streamline. So there's a lot of pros in taking on an FHA loan and holding it for a longer period versus the conventional. And I'm sure Nick will touch on that on the conventional side. But I love the FHA loan because it allows you to go up to 4 units. Acquiring a property at 4 units at 3.5% down, basically you're living for free while your rents are coming in and you're cash flowing on a monthly basis. So it's just something to consider. It's a very good option to take on as a loan.
Let me tell you why I prefer the conventional loan.
All right.
I think the FHA loan is a necessity. There's a lot of people that are just getting started, and I think it's an excellent tool. And if you can't fit into a conventional loan, then you need to look at an FHA loan, because all the things he mentioned are accurate. And it's essentially, the FHA program was designed, Jesus, like 100 years ago. It feels like 100 years, but I think it was the 50s maybe is when it came out, 50s or 60s. It was designed to give people without strong credit history and a background in owning a house an opportunity to own a house. Originally, it didn't even have a credit score requirement. Mm-hmm. And now it actually does to some degree. So it's a great tool if you're just not quite what conventional considers truly conforming. So you could be just like off by a hair and you fall into the FHA bucket, which is not a bad thing, by the way. But conventional is the better loan program. And I say that because, you know, the now conventional does offer 5% down on a four-unit.
Yeah.
You could do the Home Ready program. Mm-hmm. You don't have to necessarily do it FHA. But you can get rid of that mortgage insurance pretty quickly.
A lot faster, yeah.
A lot faster. Where, like we said earlier, you're never going to get rid of an FHA mortgage insurance situation.
So why were you giving me such a hard time at the beginning of the show when I said that the conventional deal is going to be a little bit more sophisticated for the buyer who doesn't want to pay all those fees, right? Because technically, the 5% down loan product, which is the conventional, reduces the fees. And that's why more savvier investors are going to say, I don't want to pay all those fees.
You mean the mortgage insurance premium that's paid up front?
1.5% upfront PMI plus the monthly carrying premium. So if you're putting 3.5% down and then you're putting 1.5% and dumping it into the loan, your initial investment's already at a 5%.
I thought you were referencing, like, if you have the 20% down, you should always do it.
No, I was saying, like, a conventional starts at 5.
I wouldn't criticize that. I literally thought I heard you say,
20%
if you have
down.
20% down, you should be putting it down at all
times. I was just saying there's a difference between
EMI?
The two loan products. And one is 20% down. That's your conventional low risk for the investor, which is the lender that's lending you the money. But if you're going to put down 5%, and if I have 15 offers, I'm going to say, well, the 5% guy, right? Because, and like you said, Tom, right? You're going to accept the offer that comes in as sold as is. Or, they're going to do the inspection. They're going to put a lot of money down as an earnest. Not that we keep earnest, and earnest is just blah. But it shows that people want the property, right?
Right.
So
right.
When we're advising conventional versus FHA in this marketplace, I just don't want buyers who are listening to think, it's not that you don't have a chance. It's just, it's so difficult for us because we're writing multiple offers for many buyers. You just said one buyer wrote three.
Mm-hmm.
And three of those got rejected. And you're going, I mean, you rejected mine. Let's have a therapy session here.
You also have to understand that one of the reasons, now it gets a little confusing. There's been some new regs and rule changes in the lending industry where some lenders have different opinions on how they price their FHA loans versus their conventional loans. Some lenders price their profit margins exactly the same. Some lenders put a little bit more profit in what is perceived to be a harder loan to do in the FHA stuff. So generally speaking, margin per margin, an FHA rate is lower than a conventional rate, generally speaking. Some lenders aren't like that. So we don't know which lender is which and who that client's applying with and what their policies is internally. But sometimes they're just picking the FHA loan because the rate is lower.
Right. So ideally,
and you shouldn't penalize them thinking, oh, they probably have a low credit score, some things in place. They're not.
And it's not that we're penalizing them. I mean, I hate for people to think Carla is elitist and saying,
well, no, you want to get the strongest buyer for your client.
Yeah,
your
I want my clients not to lose leverage.
Right.
And Tom, you understand that when it comes to processing an FHA loan, a conventional loan, you're like, done. If this person's loan was pre-approved and they showed documents.
You got to do your job of vetting out that lender too to make sure that pre-approval is solid. Just because somebody's putting 30% down on a conventional loan, you still got to pick up the phone, call that loan officer.
Well, say, that's why people think that getting multiple offers, it's easy for us.
Yeah, it's definitely
it's not. We have to call 15 different lenders, right? In the highest offer platform, you got to call these buyers, 8 lenders, and find out, like, I mean, Graco, how many calls have I asked you to make for, you know, on behalf of my buyers just to, you know, talk to the listing agent to say it's a strong buyer? We've not only had a phone conversation, but we also looked at documents. And a lot of lenders don't look at documents. I mean, this is a shout out to you. Most recently, I had a file where my client decided to go somewhere else, and the lender made the biggest mistake and didn't even look for documents. Unfortunately, my client had a short sale years ago. And the first thing Graco asked was, let me see the documents from the short sale. And this other lender didn't do that. And I mean, now I'm here, my loan, we were due to close at the end of this month, and now they're asking for 30 more days because they have to completely redo the loan again. So imagine going through.
I was only asking for 15 days, by the way, so. Yeah. If you're watching and listening, we can close a lot faster than that.
Yeah.
Garbage lender that didn't do their job.
little arm goes fast. We got it. We got it.
Sometimes fast is good.
Good. Yes. Jimmy John's.
Can I disagree? Okay. Anyway, so going back to our scenario, full disclosure, I'm not trying to sound elitist. In the best case scenario, fourth quarter, call me. We'll do an FHA all day long. But right now, it's spring market, and I got to deal with people like Tom. I have no chance out here to try to get a deal done.
This feels like a therapeutic Carla Mina session. It doesn't really feel like a show about FHA versus conventional.
But it is FHA versus conventional. People are out there shopping with
just
FHA.
Tell us how you feel about your problems, Carla. Go
ahead,
Tom.
One more thing about FHA and conventional.
My advice, I guess, for FHA is you know, if it's a nice property that doesn't look like it's going to need a lot of renovation.
That's exactly where I was going with that.
Then keep in mind that you as an FHA buyer, if you're writing an offer with 3.5% down, I had an FHA offer in this mix that was a bigger down payment. But if you're writing, consider that you're going to be compared to other offers that are 5% down. And if there's an offer that's got 10 or an offer that has 20% or more, that's going to get more leverage. So I'm not sure that you have to compensate versus the 5% down conventional offer so much. You might have to compensate price-wise to induce the seller to accept the risk of a less than 20% down payment if you think you're going to be competing multiple offer-wise with conventional offers of
5%.
I'm going to say this. With the new landscape of lending and how loan officers, specifically loan officers, I'm not talking about institutions like the actual company they work for, but the new landscape of lending and the way loan officers are paid today versus prior to 2000, and I think it was 11 or 12 where the comp structures changed. A loan officer gets paid the same on every loan, regardless of the credit criteria, down payment, loan program. They have no incentive to switch the loan from one program to another. So what does that mean? That means that a loan officer nowadays will obviously take the easiest road traveled for the client.
To make it
work.
Make sure it closes.
And in a case like when you're looking at FHA, back in the old days, if I was a seller, I saw an FHA loan versus a conventional loan, I wouldn't have put too much stock on it. I would have been like, well, you know, the loan officer probably wants to make more money, so he's picking the FHA loan. I don't necessarily think that's how it worked back then. Yeah. Did it not, Graco?
Don't think buckets. About it like that now.
How it worked back then.
Really?
So if you were selling your home back then, you're like, FHA versus FHA versus conventional doesn't really mean anything to me. It just means an LO has more motivation to do a loan that he profits more. So these clients might be 780 credit scores. They're putting down 5%. They could easily go conventional, but this loan officer is picking the route of FHA. Today, if a loan officer is handing you an FHA pre-approval, that's an automatic red flag. Not saying you should turn this client away, but that's an automatic red flag that they do not fit into conventional for some reason or another. What that is, that's, you know, hopefully it's not a big reason. Maybe it's something very small, like 45% debt to income ratio, but he's really a 47. That's not a big deal.
Right.
But, or he's not a 720 credit score. He's a 610 credit score, but he's got great income, great assets. You know, So you have to look deeper into the cake, or try to if you're a seller, but you should know that a loan officer has no motivation to pick what is still going to be a slightly harder loan to do. If he's willing to do it, that means he can't. This client cannot go conventionally. Yeah, it's just the reality of where we stand today.
Well, now, but I don't think that we're looking at FHA loan products and thinking, oh, somebody's trying to profit out of it. I understand people have hiccups in their credits, and that's why this is a more lenient
There is no more profit, is what I'm saying. There's no more profit in either one
of those.
You're
saying in the old days.
In the old days, there was.
Right, but as realtors, listing agents, we're not looking at it that way. We're more so looking at it like how, if we're picking out of 15 people, I want to pick the strongest buyer.
Mm-hmm. Right, but that's what I'm saying. If you're getting handed that FHA approval, that loan officer really didn't want to go there unless he absolutely had to.
Right.
Now you should know that.
And we understand that, of course. I mean, I have FHA buyers, and I understand why we're in the FHA program, and we've chosen that product. But one more that the other difference that I don't know, I think we kind of like browse through it. It's more about that appraisal inspection. Right, we talked about reducing, buying the property in as-is condition, meaning you can do a home inspection, but you can go back a nickel and dime, or not nickel and dime, but renegotiate credits or reduce that net number for the seller.
Right.
So with an appraisal, you're buying the property as is. So the seller's saying, I'm not doing any repairs. But here comes the appraisal saying there's chipping paint in the garage, in the exterior windows, and
in
downstairs
the
in the basement there is hanging wire. So all of a sudden the client has to say, well, but I'm selling it as is. So it goes back to, let me go back to that 5% down conventional deal, since we're,
That's a case by case, though. I mean, and you guys vet out these properties early on.
Tom, this property that you're selling, did it need a lot of work? Or some work? Is it going to pass FHA appraisal?
We're back at that one again?
Yeah.
Just make it sure.
An example.
It actually had peeling paint in the enclosed rear porch that would have been required FHA to
Thank you.
Be dealt with.
I'm just saying, is the dynamics, you guys, there's not a lot of turnkey products. There's not a lot of properties that don't need a lot of work. And they're selling like hotcakes because of the market. So the only reason why I wanted to have a show of FHA versus conventional, it's because in this marketplace, we have to understand the difference in how to negotiate these loan programs.
Well, what if the contract says, sometimes you get a situation where a seller just bought some new appliances, right?
Right.
Literally a year ago, then something happened, they decided they have to sell. They want to take, they love their stove and they love their refrigerator and they want to take them with them, so the house is being sold without it. I know that sometimes that's really not recommended by you guys, but that's a dead FHA loan right there.
Yeah.
Right. When you write up that there's no more appliances,
Carla would buy
doesn't get
a
approved
stove, fridge, and a dishwasher and get it in there.
Those are those little nuances.
But
that are
that's
annoying.
The other thing. Like if I have a relationship with Tom, and I will say, Tom, I'll make sure that my client goes and cleans up that chipping paint. I'll bring in my own appliances. Can you please let me have this deal? Then we'll get a deal done.
You're gonna fix GFIs.
I've had FHA deals.
I will do
GFIs.
Wait, they check GFCIs too.
GFCIs.
GFCIs. GFIs.
In the kitchen.
Is GFCIs. GF. Eyes. Okay.
That's okay. That's okay.
Grand fault, move on. Circuit interrupter.
Let's do it. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. All right. Grocco, anything else about your convention?
Can we wrap up our nitro question?
We got to get to the nitro question. We have to get to the nitro question. The nitro question, back at Tom here, was in 26 years, excluding the market crash, which is a dark time for everybody in the industry, was there ever a moment, a file, a situation, a transaction, or even just an era where you're like, man, this is way too grinding for me. I think I need to make another career changing goal. Either go back to being a CPA or just do something different, because this isn't worth all the stress or whatever that particular thing was.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't think there was ever a time when I thought about going back to be a CPA.
Or just get out of the industry.
Right. And I wouldn't say I got out of the industry, but there was one year, the day after Christmas, I got a phone call late at night, like 8 o'clock, my kids are there, and I recognized the phone number as being a past client who had sold her property, and I thought, I have no reason to be talking to her right now because she moved out of the area. And so I let it go to voicemail, and then I listened to the voicemail, and my client obviously was enjoying herself a little too much and just was going on and on. And as I was listening to the message, there's another phone call coming in, and then a third, and then a fourth, and then a fifth, and she left five successive messages that were just crazy about the transaction, which I got her out of a property during the market decline at a great price.
Wait, so she was complaining about you to you in your voicemail?
In five successive voice messages the day after
so,
Christmas.
So like the tape ran out at AT&T and she had to reset and call you five more times?
And I, you know, and then I started just listening to them and playing it for my kids. And my kids were teenagers to young 20. They're like, she's crazy drunk.
And I'm like, crazy.
Yeah.
So it's so much verbal abuse.
It was sort of
that you're like, this isn't worth it anymore.
It was yeah. It was sort of like,
why am I doing this to myself?
Why do people think they can call us at 8 o'clock at night and
on Christmas?
The day after Christmas and just Christmas. And like just start dumping on us. I'm like,
I don't know.
We are still business people who have lives outside and the whole nine yards.
I mean, Carla does it to me every day. It's not even, you know, so,
I could tell that. No. You know.
But that's Carla. She's talking about a client. That's terrible. Hey, I would cry.
We've all had the clients that are...
She was... And my kids were like, Dad, was that a really bad transaction? I'm like, the closing was a little tough because I stopped by the night before to see if she was going to have everything cleaned up. Broom clean condition for the final walkthrough the next morning. She said yes. Her kids were helping her. We got in there the next day.
Well, and I'm
it
sorry
was
to hear that.
Far from it. So I physically hauled out a bunch of stuff to the garbage, and she had to settle for $400 at the closing table. Mm.
Makes good times.
Good times.
Like crazy clients.
Well, I'm right. He said they left a long message and they were enjoying themselves. And I was like, whoa. What kind
yeah,
of
I know.
Message?
No,
no,
like,
sorry.
Where's this going?
She was like, oh. Clearly imbibing.
It was a year midnight call.
No, no.
Yeah, I was like, that doesn't sound like a reason to leave the industry. I need more of these clients.
I'll direct those to you.
It's a show.
Is it?
It's a show.
You got to be kidding
yes,
me.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Do your job.
Oh,
see?
Boy.
Thank
you.
Sponsors.
Don't want to put anything, you don't want to put anything, anything else into this? You
no,
sure?
We're good. That all in.
You said all you had to say.
We're all in.
All the difference all. Between
make
a whole
sure
show
you watch
you.
This show and get your info on FHA versus conventional.
I don't know how. I
he's
take
so
that
persuasive.
Back. Make sure you watch this show if you want to learn how to do multiple offers. Because that's what the show is about.
I don't understand will, why you well, always have
back,
to be so we condescending.
Come, take over. The
we will come back in a few
over.
Weeks and do FHA again. It's all good.
What are you talking about? We explained exactly
I think
what
I was trying to say. Don't try and do FHA
don't
on
try
a
no,
new
no.
listing these yeah. days.
So. I mean, it's 3 days. I don't. Oh.
Carla's actually trying to negotiate with him right now.
Mm. You guys are a bunch of haters. I'm so dumb with you two.
It's
like,
so far.
Seriously.
And here's officially. The deal. Offer number four has called me and said,
"You know what, Tom?
I never
thought, you too.
I never thought my client would have to go higher than what I did.
See,
wow.
There's
she's,
a lot of therapy
more than
going $50,000
on.
We have realtor
over.
Therapy, realtor kumbaya.
Stinkum sponsors here.
Woo-wee!
Stinkum sponsors.
Well, let's get to the people that actually help pay the bills around here and keep the lights on, and even unfortunately, Carlo's microphone sometimes."
Which is Mike broken.
Mike Randick and Carmen Carbonara of Stewart. Title.
Carbonara.
Yeah, that way. You put all Latino on it. Tamika Scott with Money Matters Financial Peace. Denise Edenhofer with Fidelity National Home Warranty. Joanna Diaz with Credit RX. Lisa Yacino with Allstate Insurance. We want to thank you guys all for sponsoring the show today and all month as well. This show will be cataloged with all our other shows. We are obviously going to be live here every Thursday at 5:30 p.m., but if you missed it or you're catching into it a little bit late, go to YouTube. You can catch that our YouTube channel at Market Overdrive on YouTube. Facebook / Market Overdrive. You can go to the WGN Plus website and look up Market Overdrive there, as well as subscribe to their podcast. We are part of the WGN Plus family on your iTunes account. And last but not least, you can go to our website, www.marketoverdrive.com.
That's like the first time you actually give us all.
Other than that, you can go to Carla Mina and email her, spam her, leave her, whatever message you want to leave her.
Let's get out of here.
Just call her.
Seriously, what is wrong with you today?
This clothes.
Her phone number
oh
is. We will be back next Thursday.
Wait, do you know my number? What's
at
my number?
Five, I have no idea.
I know your
it's
number.
Under, it's under
number.
Goofy little crazy thing. Maniac. We'll be back next Thursday, 5:30 p.m. See you. Bye. Good job.
Yeah.